Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
It's Wednesday, just almost 9 minutes after 9 o'clock. Good morning, everybody. I'm Andy Griffin. Zach Renstrom is in the house. Hi, Zach. What's up, man?
Good morning.
Looking sharp today with the suit jacket on and everything. Yeah, no tie, though. That's good.
I hate ties.
If you'd have put a tie on, I'd have been like, dude, you're out of here. We don't want that crap in here. Just kidding.
Yeah.
I had a... It has nothing to do with Zach, but I had a tie problem because I, every time I saw a cool tie, I would buy it. Mm. And I had 143 ties.
Wow.
And, now think about that. I only wear a tie on Sunday, Zach. I don't have to wear one to work. So 143 ties. There's 52 Sundays a year. If you take out a couple of general conferences and some other stuff, you know, I might wear a tie every 4 years or something. So, but I did find that I had like 20 ties that I really liked. Uh-huh. And then the other 80 or 120, whatever they were, I was kind of like, eh. And so, we did a spring cleaning, my wife and I, in the summer, this year. And I cleaned out my closet. And in doing so, I got rid of over 120 ties, gave them to my son. He had an activity in his neighborhood. They called it a tie swap and let everybody come and pick ties or whatever. And I had some BYU ties, some Utah Jazz. I had some really cool ties anyway. And the rest of them, the ones that were left over, he sent to missionaries overseas.
Oh, so that's
somebody
cool.
In Guatemala or whatever is wearing my tie. That's kind of cool.
So ties are incredibly dangerous. Just
yeah,
so you know.
Dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because they have, I mean, if you think about it, you have something tied around your neck.
It's a noose, yeah.
And it's a piece of material flapping out there. And so, like on construction sites or anything like that, I mean, that's just, they can just grab it, pull it down. And then the other thing is people really don't wash their ties like they should.
That's
so
true.
So they carry a lot of bacteria.
He was going to say astronomical.
Yes.
That's a good word.
My son looked all this stuff up because I made him wear a tie one time and he got mad at me. And so he did this research on it, how bad and dangerous ties are. So,
okay. I would counter that with, yeah, but how long do you wear a tie? 2 hours a week, you know? I mean, if you don't have to wear one to work, you don't wear them very often. So how many germs can you get on it in 2 hours a week? I don't know.
Well, look at your tie next time and see if there's like gummies. Like if you just think about it, yeah, there's just...
You know, the origin of ties was they had nothing to wipe their mouth with, so they wear a tie so they have something to wipe their mouth with, and we don't do that anymore because it's made of such a material. If it got dirty, it was worthless. Yeah. So, but anyway, 2 minutes on ties here on the Andy Griffin
Show.
All right. You know what my friend says? He says a tie is like kissing your sister, and he was talking about a tie in sports. Nobody wants a tie. Neither team is happy if you come away with a tie. It's like kissing your sister.
That's a weird...
It's a weird analogy.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Zach is here. We're here to talk about... Let's start with the Desert Garden 10th year, 10-year anniversary, right?
Yeah, so...
And by the way, Carrie told us both we had to talk about this before. She's not here today.
She did. Well, we're doing some celebrations up there.
So okay, party time.
Yeah, this coming Monday, we're going to have an event where there's going to be a lot of things for families to go up there. And we're going to have the ducks float down that little stream.
The plastic ducks. Rubber duckies.
Yeah.
Okay.
But then right after that, we're going to go into the Halloween season where local businesses put scarecrows and they decorate it all up. We get a lot of great activities. And then once Halloween's done, they go right into changing it out for the Christmas lights.
Yeah.
And so this is our busiest time. And people just really love it. If you go to TripAdvisor, it's like number one thing listed for St. George City to do.
Really? Wow. Yeah. Number one.
And the other thing is most people don't realize why we even have it. And so it was actually a mandate by the federal government for us to build that.
And it helps people. And I wrote a story about this. Helps people to understand that when you... I mean, we all like the lawns, but if you take your lawn out, you don't have to just put rock in, right?
Yeah.
You go up to the Desert Garden, you're like, wait, I can have that and that. Oh, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So.
And then if you go there, you learn a lot about our endangered fish that we spend a lot of time on. And so you have to do mitigation when you do certain projects that have the federal nexus. And one of the things that you can do for mitigation is education. And so that garden was that was part of the mitigation for some projects to educate people about water conservation and mostly about the fish and what we have in the Virgin River.
Nice.
But people love it now. So my office kind of looks towards it, and it's fun to see all the people that come up there, all the kids, all the every once in a while people get engaged up there. It's pretty fun.
Now, how old are your kids, Zach?
They range from basically 18 to 23.
Okay, so they're a little old to be playing in the desert garden, but they probably go there, right?
When we were younger, my wife, especially when they were little kids, she would go up there a lot and walk around, and the kids got to see all the plants. And we have a big gong up there right now where people can, like,
take a
little hammer and gong it. And I thought, when that first went up, I thought, this is going to be so obnoxious. But people really enjoy it, and they, you know, it's a lot of fun for them. And so, it's just a great place to go up there and enjoy it. And
I went last year to see the Halloween displays. Very cool. Our family has gone, I don't know how many years in a row. Not more than 10, obviously, but we've gone there every year for the Christmas lights. It's pretty awesome.
It is amazing. And his name's Ryan, the guy that's over it.
Way to go, Ryan.
Yeah, he does a great job, and he's just so passionate about it. And yeah, does a great job.
Okay, so the party, the celebration is Monday. That's next Monday, 5:30 to 7:30. There will be, according to Carrie, music, face painters, cookie decorating, and more. Fun, and guess how much it costs? Nothing. It's free.
Free.
Yeah, my favorite word. That is my favorite word, free, by the way.
Yeah.
I love free. So up there at the Desert Garden, if you don't know where it is, if you haven't been there, it's just right there on Red Hills Parkway. Kind of by the Sugarloaf, just this side of the Sugarloaf, and it's not very far away at all.
Nope.
So it's that side of the Sugarloaf. It depends on which side you're on, I guess.
it's on the east side of Sugarloaf.
There you go, east. We got directions here, and I don't know. A lot of people are like, don't give me an east, north, south, west. Just tell me what it's by, because it's on Red Hills Parkway, and it's by the Water Conservancy District, right?
Yeah.
So we got it. All right. Well, Zach, I saw an article today. This was on The Wire. It says a new report from Utah State University warns that the Colorado River is once again nearing crisis levels. USU's Colorado River Studies team says water storage in Lake Powell and Lake Mead is now comparable to dangerously low levels seen between 2020 and 2022, years marked as an unprecedented crisis time. Jake Schmidt, Jack Schmidt, do you know Jack?
Yeah, I know
Jack. Jack, who directs the Colorado River Studies program, says the shrinking reservoirs are a clear warning sign that region faces mounting water challenges. And I would say, well, thank you for the warning, but I guess there's a little we can do about it. We can conserve, but there's not a lot we can do. We can't make it rain.
Yeah, this is a subject that I could go off on for probably 6 hours.
Okay. Well, we don't have six, but we have 45 minutes anyway.
But clearly throughout the western United States, there is less rain, there's less snow, and it's hotter. There's a lot of theories out there on global warming, what's causing all that. I don't get into all that. I'm just saying there's less precipitation and it's warmer. And so that has certain effects. And so anybody that's been to Lake Powell or Lake Mead can see that. And so when they say they're getting down to levels that make us very nervous, there's a couple things going on. It's just, first of all, we don't have that water stored there for the future. And so the other thing that makes us very nervous is to operate those dams. Those dams produce a lot of electricity, and that's like the cheapest electricity out there. It's really cheap electricity. It's some of the most reliable electricity.
Right.
If those reservoirs get too low, they can't generate electricity anymore. And so people say, well, no big deal. Well, when all of a sudden you take the largest and cheapest producing thing of electricity off the grid, then what happens is your electrical rates go up, and it destabilizes the grid. And so you have a compounding problem here. First of all, you don't have enough water, and that's a huge issue. But then also you throw in there, oh, and by the way, your electrical rates will go up substantially. And so that's why when these articles come out and they say, hey, this could be really bad, it can be, just not, I mean, right here in St. George, yeah, we're not getting any water from Lake Powell or Lake Mead, but we would definitely feel the effects of it. And so the question is what does that mean? The Bureau of Reclamation has put out some preliminary studies showing that if they cannot produce electricity out of Lake Powell and Lake Mead, it's going to affect the Western economy in the tune of billions and billions and billions of dollars.
Wow.
So there's a lot of things going on there that we're very concerned about.
I know you can't predict the future, but it seems like just, was it 2 years ago, we had an unusually wet year. We had a pretty wet year. Is a good year going to fix it, or do we need several good years, or what?
So the tough thing that we're seeing right now is usually if you had a 95% snowpack, you get a 95% runoff. And they were, the last 100 years, they were connected. And in the last 20 years, that has been separating. So this last year, the Colorado watershed basin had a snowpack of 95%. And so you're like, hey, that's pretty good. We should have a pretty average runoff. Well, the runoff is going to be recorded as one of the lowest ever.
Oh, even though they had plenty of snowpack, the runoff is low. Because?
So because, first of all, it's hotter. And so with that, the air can hold more water, so it sucks more water out of evaporation. The snow's coming off earlier. And so when the snow comes off earlier, what happens is you have more just plants up in the mountains. And so those plants will kick off earlier, almost a month earlier. And so those plants are consuming that water faster. The soils are drier. And then our forests are completely unhealthy. And so if you go in and the forest management people say, you know, what's a healthy forest look like? How many trees per acre? And they'll come out, and it depends on where you're located at and a few other things. Well, our forests are completely unhealthy too. And I could go off on why, but that's another problem. So that there's a compounding effect that's going through the whole system right now. Fortunately, we've had these huge reservoirs that were built a long time ago. And so as we're drying up, we've been able to rely on those. And if we do have a wet year, we're able to capture some of that water. But the problem is we're having just too many dry years in a row to carry over a little bit. So what we honestly need is we need like the early 80s. We need a couple of those years to get out of it. And so if I could have an 81, 82, 83, and 84, then that would bring us back up just to probably normal. And there's there's always a statistical chance that'll happen. But as we're going into this year, they're already predicting that it's going to be a dry winter for the Colorado River snowpack.
So. I was going to say, so you're a man of technology. I'm a man of technology. But what do the old Farmer's Almanac and some of those books say? Does it seem like we're going to trend to wet anytime soon?
So they won't give us predictions long term out like NOAA. And they usually give us like 6 month forecasts. And so it's just one of those things. The 10 day forecast is really good.
Yeah.
The 30 day forecast. Yeah. It starts to get anything past 30. I think you're kind of flipping a coin. The real question is, and it just kind of comes back to that statistical chance of what is the chances of hopefully we'll just have a normal snowpack, that should be a 50-50 chance, right? But we haven't had a normal snowpack in the last 20 years, what I would call normal or a little bit above normal just hasn't been happening. So we're in a dry spell. Some people will say it's the driest spell that we've had in 1,000 years. And so there's a lot going on there. But regardless of that, the lake levels are low, and it's because there's not getting water into those lakes.
It's interesting. I agree with what you're saying. In fact, my dad was a TV weatherman, and he said, back when he was a weatherman in the 80s, really beyond the next day or two, it was mostly educated guess. And, he had a partner that was a climatologist, and the climatologist is a guy that studies what's happened in the past. And that's kind of how they had to make long-term predictions. He said, but nowadays, these newfangled instruments, as my dad would say, they're pretty accurate. They're pretty good. And, I was looking at today's the forecast for the next 10 days, and it looks like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we're supposed to get showers and supposed to be moist. Boy, that sounds really good. But, I grew up in a house where you had 3-4 days out. Come on, how accurate could that be? But apparently it's supposed to be pretty accurate, we hope, right?
We watch it very close because we will change our operations basing on if it's raining or not, and where we'll direct water. So we really watch the local forecast a couple days out to see what's going on. But after 10 days, and these climatologists, it's all statistics at that point.
It is, yeah.
And then you have the climatologist, and I mean, and they try to predict whether it's going to be hotter in the next 20 years or colder.
Yeah. What's the trend?
I get a little skeptical at that point, but we just need to learn to deal with it. Is my point. So
yeah, yeah, and so in a lot of people right now, and I'm sure, you know, I made a joke about it early on, but people are saying, well, how can we can let them keep building here if we are going to run out of water, or if we are in a trend where there's not water coming that we need? And do you have an answer ready to go for those people?
Oh, sure, 100%. So I will say, as someone that is a water manager and expert in this field, I think Washington County, we are some of the best prepared in the Western United States. And I think part of that is our local citizens, our elected level officials, they want to be prepared. And so we're prepared for that. And so first of all, we're building really water efficient homes nowadays. So these new homes that are being built right now are the most water efficient homes in the Western United States. But then the district, we have a plan for what could happen there. And so that's where reuse comes in. We also have, like, under Sand Hollow Reservoir, you go and you look at Sand Hollow Reservoir, and you see how much water is in there. Well, we put three times that amount under that aquifer. And so if we do have a drought, a sustained drought, we can tap into that. We already have the wells all the way around it that we could tap into that. And so I think we're forward thinking and we're better prepared than a lot of these places, especially even in Utah. Some of these cities, not our cities, by the way, we're good here in Washington County, but some of these other cities, I'm really worried about what's going to happen to them.
Well, and that begs the question. I mean, you may be well, for instance, you get to retirement and you want to travel, you know, with your friend, only your friend didn't have any, he didn't save up for retirement. Mm-hmm. You want to go on a trip. Hey, you guys should come with it. Well, yeah, we can't. You know, and I use that as an analogy to, you know, we're well prepared here in Washington County, but what if the next county over, north or south or east or west, what if they're not prepared? Mm-hmm. Does that present a problem for us because we prepared and they didn't?
So in this area, our system, in Washington County here, we're kind of a little bit isolated. So like our aquifer, our drainage shed is not necessarily tied to some of these other cities. And so we are kind of protected. On the Virgin River, that's what makes me nervous. And so let's say we have a drop of water that falls in Zions National Park. Well, that drop of water could actually make it to somebody's sink in San Diego.
Right.
And because it flows down the Virgin into Lake Mead and then down the Colorado River, and they bring it over. So one of the things that the state of Utah is doing, and part of my jobs, is making sure that we're protecting what's ours and what's fair, and we're not letting other basin states come up and basically take our water. And if somebody's like, oh, there's no way, well, it's true. Like Met Water, which is the largest water district in the world, that's Los Angeles and San Diego, I mean, their annual budget is in the billions. They basically have a plan that we use less water here in the Virgin River in Washington County so that water can flow down to them.
Yeah.
And we're going to fight that tooth and nail. And so that's, yeah, it's part of my job is to make sure that somebody doesn't come steal our water.
Meanwhile, they're throwing millions at their lawyers to try to beat you down.
Hundreds of millions of dollars.
Hundreds of millions of dollars at lawyers to try to beat you down so that they can get their own way.
But fortunately, our Utah State Legislature, about when we saw this fight coming up, I know people get upset when I call it a fight, but it is.
It is. We're standing up for our rights.
Yeah. Our Utah State Legislature formed what's called the Colorado River Authority of Utah. Mm-hmm. And so I'm on that board. And basically, it's like Utah needs to be prepared for what's coming up and to be treated fairly. Because in the past, we have not been treated fairly. We've been taken advantage of, in my opinion. And so our legislature formed this new authority. And it's been really good because the Attorney General's office is in it. And so we're able to do a lot more. And Utah now is looked at as a leader on the Colorado River. And it's you want to be in that position during a negotiation.
Won't they, though, then appeal to a judge and say, look, you know, Washington County, 200,000. We got 900,000 in San Diego alone. Yeah. Are you really going to let these people not have water because you have rights? Isn't that kind of going to be their argument?
Yeah. So I told you I could go off on this.
Yeah.
No, so our argument with that is San Diego doesn't need it. And the reason why is because they're by a freaking ocean. They can do desalinization. It's right. Proven technology. It's that they actually do some. And we're like, they have created their own problem in California. And so, first of all, they can solve their own problem without coming and stealing our water. And second of all, it's our right. Like, it is, Utah is entitled to this water. That's the fair, equitable division of the river. It's settled law, and that's how we've been operating under it. And just because some other area has not managed their water well or has not been forward thinking, we shouldn't be punished for their sins.
Yeah. Yeah.
I told you I could go.
You could. It blows you away to think somebody like San Diego. I mean, if you've been to San Diego, folks, it's right there on the ocean. Coronado Island's right there. There's a naval base. I mean, there's water everywhere. Yeah. To think that San Diego is coming up short on water is like, wait, what?
The desalination, they actually do have a plant there. And where it discharges into the ocean, it's a surface flow that discharges in the ocean. And they've done a ton of monitoring it. And within 100 yards of where it's discharging the river or into the ocean, they can't detect any difference.
Really? 100 yards?
100 yards. And so, they take, basically what they're doing is they're bringing in salt water or the ocean water. And they're just kind of stripping out 10% of the water and then discharging it back in. And so, first of all, they're not highly concentrating it. They're only just taking a little bit. And then when they put it in, it mixes fairly quick. And so people recreate in it. There's fish all around it. Like, it's a healthy area. And so my argument as an engineer is we should have desalinization plants all up and down the California coast.
We should.
There. In fairness, there is an energy demand because it does take a lot of electricity to do that. But
maybe if they took their energy from like natural gas instead of windmills and solar, they'd have enough.
Well, and we could.
That's me talking, not Zach.
But we can even work with that because with these systems, we do it at the district where we can ramp up and ramp down. And so, like, if the power grid is kind of getting stressed, then like Dixie Power, they call us up and say, hey, you need to take these wells offline. And so we can take them offline for a few hours till it gets past that little weird peak in it and solar panels start kicking in. And so engineers can solve this problem, I guess,
As an engineer, yes.
We can solve these problems and we can do it in an environmentally responsible way.
Engineers can solve any problem. Just ask one of them, right?
Well,
I didn't mean that disrespectfully. I like engineers. They do great stuff. We're going to get a commercial break in. More with Zach and water and the river and all that stuff after this.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 9:35 on KDXU. I'm with Washington County Water Conservancy District General Manager Zach Renstrom. Hi, Zach.
Hello.
He's been on the job for, what, 7 years? Six or seven years?
Now? 7 years. Seven and a half.
Wow, 7.5 years. Wow. Yeah, and ain't nothing blowed up since you took over either, right? So you're good there.
Yeah.
You were talking about a plan. Our civic leaders here in Washington County have done a nice job of thinking about the future and planning for the future. And I think a great example of that, it was the opposite of drought, but the floods that we had. Remember, I forget the year now, but we had, rivers, homes falling into the river and stuff. And the problem wasn't that we had that much water. We had a lot of water, but the problem wasn't that we had that much water, but we had, the place where the water would drain to getting clogged up with debris and stuff. And so instead of going, hey, it's never going to rain. That was a once-in-a-lifetime thing. It's never going to do that again. Our leaders went and said, all right, let's make a plan to make sure that the culverts and all the different areas where the water drains out, that they stay clear. And if they get clogged, we have a way to unclog them. And to me, that was like, yeah, that's pretty genius because the problem wasn't the water. The problem was the clogs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And they had enough forethought to go, okay, if we get rains again, we may or may not get a bunch of rain again. We at least know what to do so that doesn't happen again. That's a pretty big deal.
I don't know if it's our culture here or if it's just the way we do things in Utah, but there's a reason why Utah is considered one of the most well-run states. And I also noticed that we'll talk about our children and our grandchildren here a lot, and what we're leaving them and our legacy.
Mm-hmm.
When I go meet with other areas, they don't talk that way.
No,
they talk more like 1 or 2 years out, or they talk maybe like. And so, like, you know, we have a 20-year plan, but even with our 20-year plan, we talk about 50 years out.
Yeah.
And we don't do that. But we do that here in Utah with everything. I mean, our state fiscally is very sound. Like, we have a rainy day fund, and that's pretty rare. And so,
yeah,
I don't know. I think it's just part of our culture here that we just don't think about ourselves. We actually think about our future.
And I will go back to one of the very first times you were on this show. You know, in 2019 or whenever it was, you talked about, well, I want to make sure that there's water, that when my kids turn on the tap, that they will have water that they can drink or take a shower or do the dishes with.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was thinking, this guy's talking about his kids and the future and stuff like that. And of course, my concern was, what about right now? But I mean, that's part of what we do, right?
Yeah.
Here in Utah. That's part of what you do. It's in your job description, right?
Yeah.
And that's what Ron Thompson taught you.
Yes, but I'm so glad I live in a community that we think longer than just maybe the next election. We think about our future and how we do that. And it's in a lot of aspects of things here. And I think that's one of the reasons why the state of Utah is doing so well, where other areas might be suffering.
All right, let's talk about the future a little bit. Reservoirs, man... We've been talking about Warner Valley Reservoir forever and ever and ever, and it feels like maybe finally it's not a fantasy anymore. It might actually happen. Is it ever going to happen, Zach?
We are in the last stages, so there is a strong possibility that the Water District will actually have the deed to the land there in Warner Valley, which is huge.
How soon?
By the end of the year.
Wow.
And so we're working with the BLM and going through all that process. So just owning that will be a huge, I mean, it's taken us now almost 10 years to get the deed to that. But once the district has the deed to that land, then when the time is right, we can build it.
What about NEPA? What about environmental studies?
Well, that's why it's taken 10 years.
Stuff. Yeah, it's, yeah.
And so...
Are those hurdles cleared now, or are we still waiting on that stuff?
So it's not finalized.
Okay.
So, but it's getting very close. And so we've got, I can start going into all these different acronyms. And so we've cleared out a lot of those hurdles. And so, yeah. So once we own it, that's a huge step in the right direction.
I was so earlier when you were talking about that, I was thinking acronyms, and you said the Colorado River, what was it, CR, Colorado River Authority of Utah?
Yeah.
CRAU, that's a terrible acronym. In the CRAW or CROW, yeah, but anyway.
Then you have CRUA, Colorado River Users Associate, yeah.
Okay, yeah, all right.
But I will say, in every industry, so I mean, as you know, we were just talking, I'm an attorney, and I'm also an engineer.
Right.
And both fields have all these weird acronyms and sayings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I know doctors have that. And so every field, and I'm sure you'll sit here and talk about I don't know what this is. You used a word for it, the board.
The board, and these are pots, not instead of the electronics and the volumes. Yeah, but yeah.
So I think it's interesting. Every industry has their own little nuance or words or whatever.
Yeah. So, and oftentimes, if you grew up around the industry, for instance, radio, you don't even know what the acronym stand for anymore, right? Like, I think POT is an acronym for something, but I don't know what that is.
Okay.
I'd have to get our engineer in there to tell me what that is. And the problem with our engineer, like a lot of engineers, no offense, Zach, is you ask a simple question, they do not give you a simple answer. I remember once asking an engineer, how do I turn this piece of equipment on? And I got a 37-minute lecture about how the electricity runs through the different... Anyway, yeah, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, but so you push this button, and that's it. Yeah. So, anyway, 9:41 on KDX. We're talking water today. Talk again. I get asked a lot about golf courses, and everyone's like, golf courses, they keep watering. We all have the grass here, and we live in the desert. How can they water that grass? Explain to me, okay, you got municipal golf courses, you have private golf courses. Mm-hmm. What water do all these golf courses use? Is it water that comes out of our tap? Is it the same water?
So no golf course right now is using what's called culinary grade water. And that's water that's gone through the water treatment plant. We put some chlorine in it. So none of them are using that. And so they're all using secondary water. Now with that,
so you wouldn't want to drink out of a sprinkler head from a golf course.
No. Okay. No, don't.
Okay.
Yeah. But they are. But some of the water is a better quality than others.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the water, in fairness, would be very easy to treat. Like you could just go get a little camping filter, send it through that, and it would be easy to drink. Or some of the other water, you couldn't do that. It would take more sophisticated treatment. So what we're trying to do with the golf course is a couple things. Is first of all, we want to just make them water efficient. Make sure they're being good stewards of what they want. And some golf courses are a little bit more advanced than others, but we're continuing to work with all of them. Then the other thing we're trying to do is with this reuse water that will be coming on, the higher quality water or the golf courses that we can, we're going to be swapping with them. And so they'll start using that reuse water to grow grass, and the water that they had been using, we will send it through the water treatment plant.
Okay.
And so we're looking at that, the use. And part of the golf story is it's an economic engine. Like a lot of people come down here to play golf. They stay in the hotels, restaurants. They go shopping. So I will say very clearly, I'm not a golfer.
Me neither.
Yeah, it's just not my jam. But I recognize that people enjoy it. It provides the economy money. And so it's like, okay, this is clearly something that's in our community. So let's just make sure we're using it really effectively and wisely.
Yeah, fiscally and water-wise.
Yeah.
Water-wise, yeah.
Yeah.
So how do they access the water? Like a municipal course versus a private course? Is a private course just, like I don't know who owns, you know, Black Desert, whatever, but do they pay a water bill and they buy the water from you just like someone who owns a home?
So Black Desert, well, see, that's what each golf course is a little different. But like with Black Desert, there was a contract that was signed probably about 30 years ago with St. George City. And so St. George City is supplying that water at Black Desert Resort. Now, that water is coming from two sources. First of all, it's coming from Gunlock Reservoir. And then it's also part of it could be coming from the St. George. So we do reuse here now. And some of it could be, like this year, some of it could be coming from the reuse plant or the reclamation plant. And so, yeah, so they have a contract with St. George City to supply the water. St. George City does send them a bill that they have to pay every year, or it might be monthly. And that's where they got that water. And so most of the golf courses just have contracts with a municipality to supply the water, or of course, if it's a city ran course, they just supplying their own water sources.
They have to pay their own bill. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Text for you, Zach. Let's see. Ooh, I scrolled off of it. Let me get back to it. Somebody texts a lot. I know it's not a reality to go back and capture anything in existing communities, but why is it not possible for new areas creating streets and gutter to collect any and all rainwater and reuse it for construction use? Or just condition dirt? If it's safe enough to go down the drain and into the river, why not capture and hold in each new community being built?
It's a great question. So we are. So there's two things with rain capturing. So I'm a big advocate of it. The tough thing with rain capturing is, like in the summer, we go a long time without it. And so
yeah, we do. When's the last time it rained?
Yeah. And we went 155 days. So with that, though, there is some water to capture. So Graveyard Reservoir, one of the things that will capture is most of the runoff from Ivan's city or town. Mm-hmm. I think it's a city. Yeah. Anyways, and so we're trying to kind of build reservoirs where we can start capturing some of that. I'm actually going to go meet with another golf course where they're going to build something where we're going to try to capture some rain. When it does rain, capture that rainwater and allow the golf courses to use it. And so what we're doing is we're kind of going through right now and where it makes sense economically to start capturing some of that water and reusing it. And so I think you're going to start seeing a lot more of that.
Text, is that why Gunlock is so low right now, because of new resort?
No, the main thing is we just didn't get a good snowpack up there. So it started out the year very low.
It never made up Lagoon.
Yeah, just never, and we didn't get any monsoonal rains to fill it up. And okay. So it just started out low, and it's been going that way the whole year. St. George City's been running their reclaim plant. There's also some irrigation wells up the Santa Clara River that we've been running pretty much nonstop to fill all that out. But what's happened is a lot of those old farmers' fields have just been going out of production. And so when those fields go out of production, the city doesn't supply that water to that field anymore because it's houses. And so that's kind of what they've been offsetting to these other new developments.
I guess one of the things we're saying is if you have any influence with the big guy upstairs, we could really use a nice wet winter.
Yeah.
We'll see if it happens. We'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
9:50 on the clock. I'm Andy. Thanks for being here. Zach Renstrom is with me today, hanging out. And I'm not dressed near as nice as he is with his suit jacket and all, but he does have jeans on to kind of offset the outfit. Yeah, not quite as. But thanks for being here, Zach. Appreciate you coming on the show, as always.
It's fun.
Great to see you. Again, a reminder to folks that Monday is the 10th birthday of the Desert Gardens, or anniversary, or whatever you want to call it. And you guys are putting on a little bit of a party up there.
Yeah.
About 5:30 to 7:30, I think, right? Yep. So, and yes, there will be some free food, light refreshments, as they say. But that'll be fun. And we are talking water today. And let's see, I just got a text. Let's see. Oh, yeah, we're just talking. They complimented us on a good show today. So,
thank you.
That's great. Appreciate that. All right, so as we get closer to, give me an order for the reservoir. We know Chief Toker, obviously, is the next one that's going to be done.
Yeah.
How far away are we from that actually finishing?
It'll be about a year.
About a year,
yeah.
Okay. What's next? Is it Graveyard, or is it the other one that I can't remember the name of out there? Or
Dry Wash. So the next one lined up is Graveyard.
Okay.
And so we have to get one last permit on that.
Okay.
So you just don't, just so you know, you don't get a permit. You have to get like 10 different permits.
No, man.
So we're to the last one.
So you got a permit. You're like, I got this. Well, what about these other nine? Yeah.
So we're in the last throes of that. And so, hopefully we get that permit by the end of the year. And so construction on that would probably start this spring.
Really? Mm-hmm. That soon? Okay. Yeah. I know everybody's like, oh, Andy's going to bring it up. Yes, I'm going to bring it up again. Have we figured out a better name for it yet? It can't be Graveyard Reservoir. It can't be. No,
I know.
Please, no.
I don't care. Like, I just need the water.
Renstrom Reservoir.
Nope. No. Maybe Thompson.
How about Rafji Reservoir?
I've been teasing the mayor, Rosenberg, that we should call him Rosenberg.
He does not like that.
No,
at all.
He gets upset. And that's why I like to bring that up to him. So if anybody sees Mayor Rick Rosenberg, you should start calling it that.
Yeah, Rosenberg Reservoir. That would be fun. He would be mad at you, though. He would be mad at us for talking about him raising.
So we'll get that one started. And then Kolob Reservoir, we're going to raise that by 8 feet.
Okay, so that's actually after you get started on Graveyard Reservoir or whatever it's going to be, then it is actually not a new reservoir, but the next thing would be to
raise it.
Raise Kolob.
Yeah.
Okay. So what does that mean by raise it?
So basically, you have the elevation of the dam and the high water level mark. Mm-hmm. And it allows to go up 8 feet.
You're actually going to raise the dam itself, and so the whole lake will then go up. Are you going to lose some picnic tables or something there when you do that?
We will lose some recreation around the lake, but we're kind of looking at some opportunities of what we could do with other recreation around the lake. I mean, it'll still be open for paddle boards and people to go fish and that
definitely.
But we have some camping stuff that would probably be affected by that. So we're looking at that option. We still have some design to finish on that. Cove Reservoir is in the
Okay, I'm doing the list here. Oh. So Toker, Graveyard, and then Kolob Raising is three, and then what's four?
Cove Reservoir.
Cove. Okay, I know the name. And
it's up in Kane County above Zions National Park.
Okay.
And so the draft EIS, Environmental Impact Statement study, should be coming out here in probably the next 6 months.
Okay.
And so we'll have that.
Now, that's not in Washington County. How does that affect us?
It drains into Washington County.
Okay.
And so it would be a joint project between the NRCS, Kane County Water Conservancy District, and Washington County Water Conservancy District. And so we'd all work together on that one because we would be able to store spring runoff and then bring that water down into Washington County when we need it.
Okay, so top four here, we're talking what kind of time frame for the four of them to actually all be finished? Like 5 years from now?
Six-ish.
Years, okay.
Yeah, it's not something it takes years to build these things.
Right.
And then you can't necessarily just fill them up really quick. You have to bring them up in a certain way.
Hmm.
So we have all that planned.
After Cove?
Well, we're looking at dredging Gunlock. We need to go up and do a lot of dredging in Gunlock. And so that would bring back a lot of capacity. But after
dredging means getting the gunk out of the bottom of it, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds hard. How do you even do that?
It's expensive and hard, and so there's a couple different ways. And so sometimes you just let the reservoir go really low. Then you drive heavy equipment out there and just start scraping it out.
You literally get out there and scrape the gunk.
Yeah.
Wow.
There's okay. some other technology there that you can do some things in, but it's more the cheapest way is to let it go down and then just go and scrape it out with some big bulldozers. And so we're looking at doing that with Gunlock. Dry wash the other one up there in Ivins. Mm-hmm. The district owns all that land. We have it all designed. We have put that on hold. Because our models are showing that we might not need it. And so we don't want to build something that's not needed. And so if the cities in that area of the county continue to do really good water conservation, that could be put on hold indefinitely if our current conservation goals continue. Warner Valley, we're going to own that land here pretty soon, hopefully by the end of the year.
Yeah.
So.
But just because you own it, then we're still talking a process, right, to get everything lined up and ready. So
yeah.
If you were to predict, and I know it's not very fair to do this, but if you were to predict Warner, with the way things are trending right now, is it 10 years away?
It's hard 15? To say.
Yeah? No?
Yeah.
It's tough. He didn't take the bait. Darn it, I tried.
Yeah. It's hard. Yeah. And so what we do is we have these models, and we calibrate our models, and we constantly update them. And we also look at, so we have multiple projects. We just don't have one project. We have multiple. And pretty much every 6 months we go in and we start looking at our different projects. And we're like, okay, which one makes, where's the growth occurring? Where do we need to get water? And we kind of look at those and then we'll say, okay, this is the engineering economical project to do next. And that's when it gets triggered.
So does drought affect that then? Like, does it change your mind on things when we don't get rain like we're in right now?
No, because we're always assuming we'll be in a drought.
Okay.
So our models are based upon droughts. Okay. And so if it's a wet year, then all we do is we fill up everything and we high-five each other and say, okay, this year's going to be easier.
But break out the sugar cookies.
Yeah, but our models, we always put in there that it's going to be a harder, drier environment moving forward.
Okay.
And that's what we do. We prepare for the worst.
And hope for the best.
Hope for the best, yep.
I love that kind of attitude, yeah. It's right in there, right in line with the under promise, over deliver, right?
The
same kind of category. But we got about 2 minutes left, by the way, Zach.
So what I want to shout out right now is the best time to do water conservation. And so what happens is you have your outside sprinklers going. And so right now, most people have them set for like 110 degrees.
Right.
And people just forget this is a great time to start dialing it back. And so since it's getting cooler, the days are getting shorter, your plants do not need as much water as they did, let's say, in July. And so this is something you don't even have to do anything except for go out to that landscaping clock and dial it back. And what that does is basically allows us to keep more water in the reservoirs for the next year. And so I'd encourage everybody to go look at their irrigation clock and see if they can't dial it back even a day or a couple minutes or whatever, because this is the easiest way to conserve water is right now in the next 2 months.
Is there a recommendation for, say, I have just a regulation lawn, is it
3 days
a week?
3 days.
3 days a week? Right?
3 to 2, yeah.
Okay. Real quick answer to this text. Is there a map of the proposed Warner Valley Reservoir?
No. Well, yes. In the EIS documents, EA documents, environmental assessment, they can find those. Or they can go to the Water District webpage, and we have some maps that show the proposed amount. So we haven't designed that reservoir. We know it's a good spot for it, and so that's part of it. And so we're assuming that would be about 50,000 acre-feet, equivalent to the Sand Hollow Reservoir.
Nice. And again, Zach wanted to mention to everybody, it's a great time to conserve water. You don't need to be watering every day right now. Not at all. And then, of course, the admonishment to those that are watering the sidewalks, they don't need any water at all. I see that, unfortunately, still all too often. So, Zach, thanks again for coming on today. It's been an absolute pleasure. Zach is here on today is the fourth Wednesday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, every fourth Wednesday. And he'll be back in October, and we may even see Carrie again if she ever decides to come back. So
we'll get her next month.
Thank you, Zach. Good to talk to you. Tomorrow, Celeste Malloy on the program here on The Andy Griffin Show. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in.